like zero.
Right, but we didn't do one for the first 4 weeks. Yeah. So,
but it's still the first one.
So whatever you want to call it, it's 2 point something, and we'll let the readers decide. Listeners, whatever. We're rusty. We haven't done this in a year. So we're going to talk about the Indiana game, the first 4 games of the season, weird punt formations, surprises good and bad, and we giggle about Denard a little bit. Pretty much the usual at this point. Enjoy the show. All right, Tim, we are back.
Indeed we are, after quite the hiatus.
Yes, our contact at Wolves kind of moved to Chicago, so we're currently in the WTKA studios, thanks to their kind allowances for our little podcast. So thanks to them, we had the non-conference schedule. Michigan is 4-0 for the second consecutive year, and everybody's pretty happy, I would assume. You have to answer the question, why isn't this going to be last year?
I think last year you saw, even through the first 4 games, you saw a lot of weaknesses.
Sure.
That you aren't seeing at least quite as many of this year. The defense is obviously still kind of scary, but I think it was actually more scary last year because you didn't have an offense that could just score at will.
Yeah.
Like it seems like you do this year.
Well, like what do you think the biggest problem with the offense is?
People getting hurt, probably.
Right.
Or finding a running game outside of Denard, which it worked fine against against Bowling Green. So.
Well, so I just want to get the question, I mean, this question answered and out of the way, because like, it's kind of been annoying to me for the last 4 weeks. Whenever you know any non-Michigan fan comments in Michigan, they're always like,
that Denard's going to get hurt once he gets to the rough Big Ten.
And they were 4-0 last year. But so last year at this point, Michigan had played Notre Dame, Western, Eastern, and Indiana. This year they've played UConn, they've played at Notre Dame, they've played Bowling Green, and they've played UMass. And I would say that those schedules are pretty comparable.
I think this year's schedule is probably just a tiny bit tougher, except for, you know, replacing a 1AA team with Indiana. But you played Connecticut, which is projected to be a pretty good Big East team at Notre Dame instead.
Yeah, so I think Connecticut and last year's Indiana team are about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame this year and last year are about the same. Probably a little bit tougher for Michigan this year since they were on the road.
Yeah.
And then Eastern, essentially equivalent to Bowling Green, because those are very bad MAC teams. And then Western is probably about equal to UMass. They were a bad MAC team. This is probably one of the top teams in NCAA. So I think it's about equal. So this is why last year is not this year. Is last year at that time, Michigan's total offense was 30th in the country at 422 yards a game. And their total defense was 89th in the country at 385 yards a game. This year, the defense is actually a tiny bit worse. They're giving up another 15 yards a game. But the offense is second in the country at 560 yards.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, huge gap. Last year at this time, Michigan was outgetting its opponents by 30 yards.
Mm-hmm.
This time it's by 160.
Yeah. And I think also in kind of on the defensive side of the ball, there are a couple, you know, mitigating factors. They gave up a ton of yards to Notre Dame on the last drive just because they were willing to not let them score. And same sort of thing with UConn. The entire fourth quarter, they were willing to give up yards.
The defense is going to depend a lot on how good the offense is. Like, that offense was able to hit their open receivers. They blocked people and they didn't blow assignments and they went right down the field on Michigan. Bowling Green didn't do that. They had a lot of missed assignments. They had a lot of bad throws. Mm-hmm. They dropped some passes. Same with UConn.
Yeah.
And you can see the same in the Notre Dame game, is that like Michigan's defense right now is good enough not to blow it consistently when the other team isn't making plays.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think, you know, a guy like Chapel, who's functional, has a couple of really good receivers and is going to go up and down the field on Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Not nearly as much as Michigan is going to go up and down the field on Indiana, but
yeah,
this defense is not to the point where it's a championship caliber defense,
yeah,
even opposite the second best offense in the country.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the point that, you know, makes the most sense, is that the defense is still bad, but the offense is so much better than last year.
Yeah,
even last year's pretty good offense, this offense is light years ahead of.
Yeah, personally, what have you been pleasantly surprised by? What have you been disappointed in? First, the good stuff.
I think anybody who...
We're just going to say Denard.
Yeah. Anybody whose first pleasant surprise is anything other than Denard is kidding you, probably.
Right.
But the offensive line, I guess we knew it was going to be good, but it's been just like crushing dudes, which is very good. Pleasantly surprised defensively, the corners have been like... I thought they were going to be as bad as any two corners that you could find in the Big Ten this year. And they've been functional, which is a huge surprise.
They haven't missed tackles. They haven't made a lot of plays. Floyd's had a couple of good plays, but not against high-quality competition.
Yeah.
I like the offensive line point is not necessarily the interior line, which I think a lot of people expected would be very good.
Yeah.
But the tackles is that, you know, I've been doing the UFRs for 4 weeks. I don't think I have a pass protection minus for either of those guys.
Yeah.
Which is a huge step forward from last year where every week they were the guys making Tate Forsett run around.
And another thing about last year is there wasn't as much depth as there probably is this year, too. You saw Dorstein go out against Bowling Green and, you know, Hughie just stepped right in with, and Luan has kind of replaced Hughie at left tackle, and it's just seamless transition.
Well, the interesting thing about, like, there were a couple drives at the end of the Bowling Green game that were pretty much a preview of next year's offensive line, because Dorstein was out.
And Barnum was in.
And Barnum was in for Schilling, and that was just what it's going to be next year. I think that was encouraging, because all you have to do is replace Schilling with Barnum, who will be a redshirt junior, I believe, right?
I think he'll be...
Yeah, because he was in Rutgers.
He's in the class of 2008.
So, you know, that'll be his fourth year on campus. He was a pretty highly touted recruit who decommitted from Florida to go to Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a couple guys pushing him from behind Mueller in Washington. Like, that offensive line should be at least as good as this one.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think, is going to be an offensive line maybe not quite of the 2000 vintage, because it's not going to have, like, four off NFL longtime starters. But I think it's probably the best one since then.
Yeah, the offensive line is as solid as it's been since I've been closely paying attention to such things as offensive linemen. That's for certain.
You can just tell that Omama went from struggling in that first game against UConn to, I mean, you get him in space and it's like watching a 300-pound wide receiver blocking downfield. Like, I think the most spectacular offensive line play I've ever seen at Michigan was him blocking T.O. 30 yards backwards and getting the safety trip over.
Yeah, getting the double block.
Yeah,
it feels like an achievement in NCAA.
Get block two guys with one block.
So, yeah, the offensive line. I think for me, a pleasant surprise, even though everybody expected him to be good, would be Mike Martin. Because he is taking double teams, and he's not just taking double teams. He's getting
He's splitting them.
And that, I think, is if Michigan's defense is going to be half decent, they're going to have to figure out a way to take advantage of that, where there's two blockers on Martin all the time, and he's still getting into the gap that he shouldn't be getting into. I think Michigan should start banking on Mike Martin being ridiculously good and then trying to cover up for their deficiencies by...
They were kind of doing a little bit differently against Bowling Green than they were. I guess Ryan Van Bergen in the postgame press conference said they were going to a lot more four-man front. I wasn't paying enough attention to notice it, but it seemed like they were getting pressure, and Bowling Green's offense is kind of predicated on getting the ball out really fast.
Yeah.
So
it's really hard to tell anything about Bowling Green, especially when their starting quarterback was out and they had a guy named Spank Rats quarterbacking.
Yeah.
But it's just nice to be sitting here 2 years after they lost to a 3-9 MAC team, 13-10, thinking, you know, that game meant nothing.
Yeah. This 44-point win is not good enough.
So, I mean, people were complaining about the defense after that game, and I was like, you know, they gave up a couple touchdown drives, but they didn't crack 300 yards. You know, it doesn't really say a whole lot, and I'm just glad that they could hold a terrible team down pretty much.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty interesting. Halfway through the game, Joe Stapleton from the Michigan Daily and UM Hoops said, oh man, Bowling Green's moving the ball up and down the field on this Michigan defense. And I was like, they have 235 yards at this point.
Yeah.
So it might have seemed worse than it was, but it was not.
Michigan started rotating guys. Like, I thought, you know, you saw Demons, you saw a lot of guys rotating in. They actually debuted a dime package, which I thought was pretty cool, where they would take out the defensive end that's either Banks or Sagesse, usually Banks, and one of the linebackers, usually it was the middle linebacker, and then to bring in the two freshman corners.
Yeah, the freshman corners got a ton of playing time.
It's kind of strange to me because the guys who, 2 weeks, I've seen Colin Christian practicing with the ones in the passing skeleton before the game. But he wasn't either of the guys who came off of the bench for the dime package. It was
Avery and Talbot.
And Christian got on a couple times and got beaten in coverage, and it's so strange that if he's going to be practicing with the ones, I thought he was going to start against the Notre Dame game,
because
usually that means you're starting. And then he's seems to be struggling more than the other two guys. I don't know. He might be a candidate for move to free safety if there's ever any corner depth.
Yeah, I remember during his recruitment, there was talk that he might be a safety further down the road.
But, you know, he goes to those those All-Star games, and they say that he's...
Yeah, more, much more fluid than expected.
Right, yeah, but they said the same thing about Justin Turner, so...
Mm-hmm. That is true.
I think the most disappointing thing for me is won't be a huge surprise, but Obiezie. And...
Yeah.
There was a complete war after the UMass game on the block after I did the UFR, and I thought that he was very poor. And I went back and I looked at a couple extra things, and I don't think he was as poor once people started, you know, saying that this is a response. And, like,
yeah.
I messed up some stuff. But at the same time.
At the same time, it's a difference between a huge negative and a sizable negative.
Yeah. So I just don't know. I think that can't see Michigan getting a whole lot better there unless they put Demons on the field and he just plays a lot better than you would expect, given the fact that he was apparently not even in conversation for a starting job in the fall. And that was after a strong spring. He's just an enigma.
Yeah, I haven't understood that with as poorly as you've seen as they play, at least some of the time, that you don't get more rotation out of the middle linebackers.
And then, you know, Mundros came in for a series against UMass and didn't do very well in that series. And it's just, I think that the walk-on thing is kind of nice, but it shouldn't be taking precedent over options that you have that are scholarship guys who are...
I mean, I'm not sure that it's taking precedence over scholarship guys. I think, you know, he's the better player. And, you know, once you're on the team, there's no pound sign next to your name signifying that you're a walk-on.
That's true. Although they might need those for, like, Courtney Avery's jersey. He can be, like, 9 pounds.
Yeah.
How did you like that punt formation, by the way?
I was trying to figure out what they were going for on it. Was it just to get more blocking once the guy
This is something that I've thought for forever, is that so with the spread punt formation, that does two things. It makes it almost impossible to return a kick.
Yeah.
And it makes it very hard to run a fake because you've got all these guys spread out all over the place, and then, you know, it's either throw and you can only throw to the two guys on the end, or you could try to run, but then there's 6 guys running at 4 guys, and that's not a good situation. So my crazy idea, which I think they actually implemented, and I was talking about it with Craig Ross last time I was on WTK, but I was talking about it in the commercial breaks.
So I
was happy about it, but I was very frustrated when they actually freaking did it, like when I didn't say it on the radio. But so you put 2 cornerbacks on the 2 guys at the end, and then you've got the 6 guys in the middle who just rush. They just always rush, and they always try to block the punt. And then you have 3 guys back, and their goal is basically just to fair catch it. And you know, if they catch the ball and there's not a guy in their face, then they can
return it.
And one of the interesting things that a buddy of mine said is that, like, if you've got 3 guys back there, the guys who are running down the field don't know exactly where the punt is going. If you've got, like, Gallen back there and he's making a fair catch signal, but the ball's actually going to DeLeo, then you might draw some guys off and get a return out of that way. And I thought that at this point in college football, just returning, not even returning every punt, but catching every punt is going to save you 10, 15 yards.
Yeah. Saw in, I think it was the UConn game where Gallen let one go over his head and it ended up costing, you know, a good 20 yards.
Yeah. So, just put 3 guys back there. They can't fake it because you're covering the receivers that are viable receivers, and you're sending 6 guys at the punter, and just catch the punts. And you saw DeLeo caught the ball and was immediately upfield, made a couple guys miss, picked up 10, 15 yards on a bunch of returns. I thought he looked very good, and I wouldn't be surprised if they kept doing that. I hope they do. I thought that was really smart.
If nothing else, it gives them more options of things that they can try on their return.
Yeah,
too.
And then the other thing is like, if it's clearly going to one guy, you might get an extra blocker back there. Because on one of the punts, you know, DeLeo was going to field it, and Gallen hauled ass over there to get a block on a guy. And that's I just think that Michigan's punt average will go – I mean, they'll get 5 to 10 yards if they just keep doing that. So that was cool. The other cool thing was the Wolverine heavy package where they had the 2 H-backs. And I'm still hoping they get Hopkins in there. But he's got to keep holding the ball, right?
So I thought something that was pretty interesting about that is that you saw that with Tate in the game and not with Gardner, where the quarterback was a rushing threat. So it was mostly just you had both H-backs, and then it was going if it was going to be a run, which I think it was almost every time, yeah. it was with the running back, not the quarterback.
Well,
which I guess you have more options in the future, too, if you want to use the quarterback.
If that's Denard right there, I don't know how you stop that for less than 2-3 yards.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, how much of a rushing threat is Gardner? He was great in high school, but, like, he's doing the thing where he still thinks he's in high school.
Yeah.
Everything outside.
Yeah, I commented that same sort of thing during the game is he needs to realize that, like, upfield is the way he needs to go, not trying to do his, like, back jukes and all this stuff that he could do on little 5'9", 160-pound kids.
He seems fast, but he's obviously not as good of a natural runner as Denard. Maybe it's just a difference in the speed of play.
Yeah, I think part of it has to be that he's not used to the speed of the defenders, and once he gets his feet wet a little bit more, he'll understand, but we don't need to worry about that anytime soon probably either. Yeah, I mean, he can get in there and run, but he's I don't think he's going to be relied upon to be like a move the chains runner anytime within the next couple years even.
Well, hopefully not. I mean,
yeah.
My big redshirt thing has now moved from this year to next year with Gardner. Because, Tate's making statements about how he's definitely not going to transfer. Mm-hmm. And he looked very good against Bowling Green, 12-12, and looked a lot faster, even though he was limping most of the game. And I think that if you're going in next year and you sit down Gardner and be like, would you like to play quarterback for University of Michigan 2014? And he's like, probably. And then might.
And that's so so far in the future that it's
I just like I'm 2014, man, that's the year.
But you also can't make those type of decisions with the assumption that you're not going to be able to recruit another good quarterback all that sort of stuff too.
I find it hard to believe that Michigan's going to be able to recruit anybody who's going to be better than Devin Gardner as a fifth-year senior. I also think that it's hard to imagine Devin Gardner getting 1 year starting in 2013 if he's got another year of eligibility and then jumping directly to the NFL. Because you just need more of a track record than that these days. Like, people are wise to the Achilles Smiths and stuff where they want you to have as much of a track record as you can possibly have. So I don't know. I still think it's a good idea, but I guess that's something for an off-season podcast.
I just think there are so many variables, and you can't redshirt your number two guy if he is indeed the number two guy.
Did he look like the number two guy?
Yeah, that's the discussion, regardless of whether or not he actually is the number two guy. You can't, if the coaches look at him as the number two guy, which obviously they have at some point, whether it's because of a disciplinary issue for Tate or not, you can't look at your number two guy and be like, oh, man, let me go in here and, click on the red shirt button in NCAA. It's not real life either.
I thought that Tate looked like the number two guy.
And if Tate is clearly the number two guy next year, then if that's what Gardner wants to do, then perfect. But if
what if it's close? What if, like, Devin Gardner is 5% better than Tate for the backup quarterback?
If they think, Devin Gardner is going to give us 5% more production than Tate would.
For the three plays that Denard misses, because he remained healthy all year except for, like, the three plays in every game where he terrifies you.
I mean, in theory, yes, you would like to redshirt a guy that young with that much potential with what seems to be a quite entrenched starter ahead of him, but,
Denard's entrenched.
Yeah, yeah. Projecting it forward.
Denard is like World War I entrenched.
Yeah.
So we are entering the Big Ten portion of the schedule, and I think I and most people had Michigan pegged at 7-5 or thereabouts, maybe even a little bit worse. But they've won.
I think a little bit worse is probably not going to happen now. I would say about 7-5 would be your baseline at this point.
I think that's the worst case scenario at this point.
Yeah.
I mean,
looking at the schedule, away games at Indiana and Penn State, Purdue and Ohio State. Purdue is, I think I'll be starting at quarterback for Purdue by the time Michigan and Purdue play. And Indiana has been they've been your traditional Indiana.
I mean, they're going to move the ball against Michigan. Chappell's a good quarterback. We're going to talk to Jamie Mack about this a little bit later, but they're 92nd in rush defense, and they've played Towson, Western Kentucky, and Akron.
Mm-hmm.
None of those teams have a win over a 1AA, 1A team.
Yeah, I looked at the numbers a little bit this morning, and Towson's quarterback averaged like 9 yards a carry or something. Right. And in all of the other games, he's averaged like 2 yards a carry. Yeah. So like,
and they just lost to Columbia by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So
Indiana is kind of the quintessential team we don't know anything about yet because they've played Towson, Western Kentucky, and Akron.
We know some things about them. We know their rushing defense is awful.
But we don't know. We don't know how bad they might be. We do know how good they won't be, I guess.
Yeah, I could see Michigan doing what they did to Bowling Green, although they'll probably get fewer possessions and they'll have more points put up on them. But
yeah,
I could see something where Michigan scores touchdowns on all but two of their drives. I just don't see how they're going to stop Michigan.
Even the Hoosier offense, it's going to be better than, say, Bowling Green or, you know.
I don't know, last year.
Maybe even UConn. But the competition that they've played just obscures how good they – actually are, I think, too, because Towson is a bad 1AA team. Western Kentucky has never won
as a
1A team. Akron is winless on the year as well. It's just not the competition that is going to...
Yeah, I mean, they could just get run out of the building. And I think the big question is whether they are actually a very mediocre to okay offensive team, which means they'll just go right up and down the field on this.
Yeah.
Does Michigan win by 2 touchdowns or 4?
Yeah, I think those are the, you know, knock on wood, those are the type of questions that are probably
That's the nice thing about having a crazy good running offense is that whenever you come up against a team that has a crazy bad run defense, that they're just going to get gashed. And like, it doesn't matter your execution so much because, you know, if they get out of position, you're just going to go. And that's how you have a bad run defense is that you miss an assignment. And then against Michigan, a missed assignment is a touchdown.
Yeah. Going back to your pleasant surprises on the season, I just thought of one.
Okay.
Turnovers and lack thereof.
Oh.
Because Michigan has thrown
That's pretty much just Denard.
Yeah, Michigan has thrown one interception, and Michigan's defensive backs have lost more fumbles this year than everybody else combined. Michigan's offense lost its first fumble of the year with Stephen Hopkins.
Against Bowling Green.
Bowling Green, yeah. So
They've been a little bit lucky since that was, I think, their fifth fumble. So you'd expect them to have lost a couple more. But, you know, one of them with the Grady fumble just went directly.
I think it's just karmic balance finally swinging back one way.
Well, it's karmic balance and having a guy like Denard who you can't pressure.
Yeah.
Like, if he's going to go back and throw the ball, like, and you pressure him and you get out of your rush lane, that's a first down. So I think when I was talking about the tackles earlier,
I guess in that sense, does that mean that kind of as long as Michigan is humming along on offense, you're not going to see a lot of turnovers? I didn't break down the numbers that much in depth when Rich was at West Virginia, but it's kind of seems like from that
I, you know, back when in 2008 and 2009 when Michigan was hugely negative in turnovers, people went back and looked at this and they looked
at
it.
I figured somebody did. But.
Yeah. So people looked at West Virginia under Rich Rodriguez, and I think every year after his first year, they were positive in turnover margin, and most years they were highly positive. And that's what happens when you run the ball 75% of the time. You're not going to throw.
Because there are two things that are bad that happen and one thing that are good when you pass.
Right. Yeah. So if you have this kind of offense where you can run it 75% of the time and still have the second best rush offense in the country.
And the second best total offense in the country.
Right, yeah. Then you're going to – fumbles are more rare than interceptions, especially when you lump interceptions and fumbles by the quarterback when he gets killed on a throw.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think probably 70% of turnovers are somehow quarterback-centric.
Yeah.
So
getting hit from the blind side and losing the ball as he drops back and all that. Yeah.
So, I mean, how many turnovers is Denard Robinson going to have this year? I would ballpark that at like 6.
Yeah. Is he so far just at the interception? Hopkins is the only lost fumble, then it has to be.
And he did cough up a fumble against Notre Dame that Vincent Smith.
Yeah, that Smith kind of got on like 8 yards downfield.
That is something that should be replicable given how well the offense is playing. And I don't know if Michigan will keep up its current streak of getting turnovers, but I think they'll be solidly positive.
The current streak of getting turnovers is kind of like regression or progression to the mean almost at some point, too.
At some point, but a bad defense is not going to be in position to get a lot of turnovers. Michigan hasn't put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and that's the most consistent generator of turnovers. And I guess since they fumbled two of their interceptions right back to the opponent, that's a point in there. I don't know what that is. But so I think that's another point. If we're talking about why this isn't last year, is that Michigan is not going to finish tied for 115th in turnover margin with -1 per game.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably going to be top 25.
Yeah, at this point, they're tied for 17th with plus one per game.
And you'll expect that to come back, but they'll be well above average at the end of the year. And that's one of the biggest factors of winning football games.
That's an enormous leap forward from the past 2 years where it's been like the Yakety Sax theme song
from the
second they touch the ball.
The step forward from the offense, a defense that is at worst going to run in place, might even be a little bit better. And then the turnovers. And then the only other nasty thing is the special teams, but you know, we didn't use them against Bowling Green. So
I think that's probably the coaches have realized that they're going to have enough trouble during games that it's going to be worth it for them when they have a 3rd and 6 to try and get 5 and go for it on 4th down.
Yeah.
As long as they're in reasonable field position, too.
3rd and 6 to me is like a quarterback draw down a lot.
Yeah. Well, 3rd and 16 is a quarterback draw down that you can pick up.
All right. Before the season, I was 7-5, trending towards 6-6. Now, I mean, they've won a couple coin flip games. It looks like it would be hard for them to lose to Indiana or Purdue or Illinois. And then you've got the other 5 Big Ten games, I think, in 2 groups, and that's Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Yeah, and then the other.
And then, you know, Iowa, Penn State, Michigan State. I think the first group, I don't expect Michigan to win. And I don't know why the oddsmakers are so down on Wisconsin.
Yeah, even Jeff Sagarin's numbers have, without home field advantage coming into account, they have Michigan better than Wisconsin at the very least.
But computer rankings don't mean anything. Yeah. They hardly mean anything at the end of the year after 4 games of non-conference schedule.
But I mean, that's part of the factor. Wisconsin is looked at as being at best on par with Michigan.
They were favored.
Despite having John Clay.
Before last weekend. And I mean, we'll talk about this later with Jamie, too, is that they're a pick'em with Michigan State this weekend, which is mind-boggling.
That surprises me a lot.
And that is a team that was very good last year, returned absolutely everybody. I think they had 11 starters back on one side of the ball and nine on the other. They lost one guy off the offense, and it was a tight end who's been replaced by Kendricks, who's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I think if Wisconsin loses a tight end, it's kind of just plug in the terror beast.
So I don't care what Vegas says. I think that's going to be a very hard game for Michigan to win. Ohio State as well.
I would say Ohio State is like in a class of itself of a game Michigan absolutely will not win. Wisconsin is like an extreme long shot, and then you have the other.
Right, but now Penn State, Iowa, and Michigan State I think are all about equally winnable. And Michigan State and Penn State, Michigan State and Iowa are at home. Penn State's on the road. Penn State
is bad.
Struggled with Temple. They've got your boy Bolden starting at quarterback, and they just lost their left tackle.
They just lost their right tackle.
And currently they're starting a guy who they moved from guard last year who's 6'3" at left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy they're starting who will start at right tackle was a position switch starter who was a defensive tackle until spring ball. And he's 6'4".
The Penn State offense, they kind of broke out a little bit in the rush game against Temple. But other than that, they've just been unimpressive all year.
I don't think they're going to be able to throw the ball at all in the Big Ten because – Bolden's a freshman, and those tackles are going to be giving up pass rush left and right. I don't know if they're going to be able to pick up blitzes. I don't think they're ever going to be able to pick up an edge rusher. I think Claiborne's going to like go Donkey Kong on them. So that's a winnable game now, even though it's on the road at Penn State. Like that, I think they could win that game.
I think that's winnable as well.
And Michigan State at home, that's a toss up to me.
Yeah, I want to be able to say that looks like a win, but it's just seeing how Michigan State has just played excellently against Michigan the last couple years, especially after several years of hilarity.
Well, they're pretty hard to read. They struggled kind of against Florida Atlantic. They didn't do very well.
Mm-hmm. Michigan kind of struggled against UMass. So.
Yeah, and then they beat Notre Dame essentially the same way Michigan beat Notre Dame. They were essentially tied in total yardage until the punt fake.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much a push them against the same opponent. The only thing that Michigan has going for it is
home field advantage,
Notre Dame on the road, and Michigan State got them at home. So
and Michigan has the Spartans at home as well.
Right. So I think, what was it, like a 4.5-point spread? That seems a little bit high to me. But and then Iowa, Michigan's actually favored by a point, or at least was before the weekend. I haven't seen updated lines yet. But
Iowa running back is like the Purdue quarterback position almost, yeah, where I'm going to be starting for the Hawkeyes in
a
couple weeks.
Yeah, they've got Adam Robinson, and we'll see. I mean, Stansy, that's a game that's going to be on Stansy's shoulders, I think, because he's going to be a senior. He's got a pretty good set of wide receivers, and they've always got a ton of tight ends. So those three games could go either way.
The thing about the Iowa game that it's hard for me to keep in mind is Michigan – really good chance of beating them last year on the road with
they basically
starting two separate true freshmen during the game.
They did it to themselves, too. Yeah. I mean, they were something like minus three in turnover margin in that game. And if they're zero in that game, they probably win it.
Yeah.
So
Martavius Odoms is still, 30 yards downfield waving his arm.
Don't remind me, man. Come on. Last year is last year.
Yeah, yeah. Denard certainly wouldn't.
Juice Williams
wouldn't
is no longer around. Yeah. We don't have to worry about that guy anymore. All right, we're here. We're 4-0. We've won the two coin flip games. We've got the three seeming gimmies, and then we've got three games that they could win or lose. So that, what is that? That's like 8.5 and 3.5. Is that a reasonable?
That's probably what they'll end up. The final record will be 8.5 and 3.5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had ties back in the day.
Yeah, I think that's probably like the projection between 8 and 9 wins. I would lean a lot more towards 8 than 9 because something has to go wrong.
Something has to go wrong. That's a typical Michigan.
But so much has been going right that something is going to happen funky that's going to cost Michigan a game. Something might happen funky that earns them a game. But I would say the former is much more likely than the latter.
Well, we'll see. That Michigan State game. Assuming Michigan takes care of business against Indiana this weekend, that Michigan State game is going to be...
For bowl eligibility.
It'll be pivotal, just period, because it's like this is put up or shut up kind of for both teams. Mm-hmm. It'll be one of the most interesting Michigan State games in the last 20 years, probably.
Yeah.
So...
Mark D'Antonio is going to... emerge from
what he's gonna do is he's going to like come in via jetpack at halftime like a robot Willis Reed and then his enormous jaw is just going to like going to smack Nard Robinson out of the stadium and it'll be like feel my moral rectitude. That's totally gonna happen. You think I'm kidding, you're laughing. It's not it's gonna happen.
No, I'm just laughing because it's so obvious that that's exactly what's going to happen.
I think this is the time when we should bring in Jamie.
Yeah, we should probably go for that.
We're going to bring in Jamie Mack now. Jamie Mack, of course, is the guy who runs Just Cover Blog, a frequent diarist and an Indiana fan.
We always find one every week.
How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you and Tim doing today?
We are about as good as we were last year at this time.
Yeah, so who knows how we'll be in a couple of weeks, but...
So you are our resident Indiana expert. Indiana has beaten Towson, Western Kentucky, and Akron, done it sort of impressively, sort of not impressively. How is Indiana looking this year?
Well, that's not exactly a murderer's row right there. That's arguably the worst Colonial team, the worst Sun Belt team, and the worst Mid-American Conference team in those leagues. But I think that they run a real good passing offense out of the pistol, and they're going to bring a senior quarterback named Ben Chapel, who's hitting about 70% of his passes, and he gets upwards of 5 or 6 guys involved in the fray. The leader this year is Demario Belcher, who's a real big-time player. But all of these targets are 6'3 to 6'5. So I think their size is going to present some challenge to Michigan vertically. And down the center of the field, they broke in a redshirt. They've been breaking in a redshirt freshman tight end who scored a touchdown in each one of those games. So if they can, go Wisconsin light, if you will, with the tight end, they could really do a lot of damage against Michigan probably.
Yeah, so they've been pretty terrible defending the run, though. They're 92nd nationally, despite playing those teams who are terrible, and they're even worse on the ground. Is there any way that they can possibly stop Michigan's rush offense?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. And that's really the thing with the Indiana program over the years is they quite often field competitive Big Ten offenses, but their defense that they field year in and year out is really like nothing better than middle road of the MAC. You know, if you want my personal opinion, and they lost a lot of stars off of last year's D. They had some defensive ends that were real good at upsetting the offense, and then the Fisher kid was a one-year cornerback for him, moving over to wideout. All three of those guys got drafted, actually. So they're undersized. They're not super talented. Yeah, you were right there, 92nd or 93rd in rushing defense, and they haven't even played anybody you know, all that well. You know, Michigan's pass defense numbers aren't that good, but they've played a couple teams that are up there statistically passing the football already. So it's good versus bad, but, I mean, I actually think that that's an advantage Michigan, because I just don't think they're as bad as they're bad, if you will.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression that I've had. I mean, that Michigan has some major problems, but for Indiana to have the kind of numbers they have against the kind of schedule they have, that seems like something that's just going to get absolutely bombed in the Big Ten schedule.
Yeah, they don't get any turnovers either, at least so far this year. They've played three games, they've got four turnovers, and, you know, they've got the offense where if you want to throw up the game, you know, and give them extra opportunities, they can make you pay. And I think when you look back at their schedule at the end of November, you know, the one or two Big Ten wins they win, I bet those will be the games where the other team just self-destructed. And so far, Michigan hasn't shown that tendency. I saw that the spread was 10.5. I'm kind of thinking Michigan can go in there and cover that number.
Yeah, I mean, that was my first thought when I saw that. I thought that the spread would be at least 14, just because you expect that a passing offense like Indiana will have a couple drives here and there where they just, you know, don't execute as well as they have to. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Michigan's offense do pretty much what they did to Bowling Green last week, given the numbers that Indiana's defense has put up.
Yeah, and I thought the line would be bigger, too. Offense is real popular with the public, you know, and Michigan just comes at you with so much fun offense that I just kind of figured that the line would be bigger from that alone. Plus, I mean, I don't think Indiana curries any favor with the betting public. Nobody ever really rushes to go play Indiana, so
yeah,
I thought that was kind of small.
Yeah, and the other thing is that this is going to be such a huge step up in terms of the level of competition that they might just spend the first quarter shell-shocked because they haven't played anybody so far this year. I think that's a pick for Michigan against the spread. Do you have we need like a number, though. We need a number for Michigan and a number for Indiana. We always ask this for the guest.
Oh, like a score.
Yeah, like a score.
Okay, a score. Let me think about that. How about I'm still going to say we're kicking extra points and not going for two, because that's not the kicking problem. So we'll go standard touchdowns, but we will hit a field goal, and I think it'll be 45-21.
Michigan. All right. Well, that's a big Michigan versus the spread. All right. Now we'll move on to the rest.
I just think that offense. I can't pick against that offense getting a low number. I mean, I just think that they won't answer the questions. Can they do it against a real Big Ten defense next week? That's just, you know, what it is. You know, and I, like you said, it's going to be a little bit like the BG game. Probably not as prolific, though.
All right, we'll move on to the rest of the Big Ten schedule. There's two interesting games and two really boring games. We'll get to the boring games first. Most boring game of the week will be Ohio State versus Illinois. Ohio State second overall in the country. Illinois. 2-1, but they lost in a fairly uncompetitive game to Missouri. Their freshman quarterback is probably going to get bombed by Ohio State.
And they were in some pretty tight games in the two that they've won as well.
Yeah. So Ohio State is a 20-point favorite. That seems fair, maybe even a little bit pessimistic for Ohio State. What are you feeling on this game?
Did you say that game was in Illinois, or was it in
Columbus? It's in Urbana-Champaign.
From a handicap standpoint, there is concern, I suppose, since they played four home games to start the year and it's their first road game. But I just don't think that the Buckeyes are going to have any trouble. They're awesome on the road. I think they're 15-6 against the spread in their last 21 road games. They're usually favorites in all of them. And, you know, Illinois, they've been running the football pretty well early on with the LeSure kid. But I just don't think they've got enough other than that. And Ohio State should be able to close that down and put the game on the shoulders of the Shellhase kid or whatever his name is, and I just think that's a disaster for the Illini.
Yeah, and then
That's a lot of points, though. That's a game that I probably wouldn't play
touch
otherwise,
it?
Just because it's kind of a lot of points. But I like making the pick for all the games. I like doing that, so I'm going to try, and you know. But that's definitely a red flag game.
All right, so your confidence level is low, but your pick is
Ohio State.
All right. Yeah, because in the fourth quarter, they're going to have Pryor throwing throwback passes.
And
wide receiver, he's going to catch six touchdowns. All right.
But the question is, does he get hurt playing finally against a Big Ten defense?
Let's hope so.
Go Marquez Wilson.
The other terribly boring game of the week is the undefeated Northwestern versus Minnesota, which is 1-3, has lost to a 1AA team by not even one score. It was a two-score game against San Diego State. And the line on this is Northwestern by 4.
That's South Dakota.
South Dakota State, yeah. So Northwestern by 4 against a terrible Minnesota team that lost to Northern Illinois by 11. I know Northwestern has not been tearing it up, but I cannot see this game being even close to competitive, even though Northwestern will be on the road.
Yeah, nor can I. And what I like even more about the Cats is that, you know, say what you will about playing at Vanderbilt or at Rice, they've already been in two road venues this year. So I do. I like the Cats a lot in this game. And they didn't just lose to Northern Illinois last night in Minnesota. They really got thumped, man. They were just, you know, that was not a good effort. And I actually like Northwestern. You know, they don't have anything on their resume. They're nowhere near a spot on my blog poll ballot, but I like the Persa kid. I thought he was a real big question mark going into the year. If he could step in and play like Kafka did last year, then the Cats would probably win 9 games. And so far he looks to be the bill. And he's got a great target in Jeremy Ebert, who is averaging about 20 yards a catch. He's a true junior, and I just think that's going to be a connection that's going to do a lot of damage in the Big Ten, and I think that they're going to probably win that game by double digits on Saturday.
Yeah, and one
Minnesota doesn't win a game in the Big Ten unless they're playing Indiana, and I actually like Indiana in that hypothetical game.
They are not actually playing Indiana this year, so
too bad for the Gophers, I guess.
Bummer. Bummer. Yeah. We could get 2-0-8 teams, but that's another story another day.
Yeah, Minnesota, that's, you know, it sounds like a great idea to hire a guy who's never been anything other than a tight end coach, but sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Yeah, for whatever reason.
That must be the worst hire in the recent history of the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's one thing that you notice when they're talking about how the SEC is just different than the Big Ten. What SEC team is going to hire the Cowboys tight ends coach and pay him a lot more than they were paying their guy who's been to who had been to a bowl for the past, you know, however many years? And
yeah,
just maybe not the wisest.
They've got some parts too that I like, or that I think you could be successful enough with, but they just have no identity. A guy like Marcus Gray just seems like his talent is just being totally wasted over there.
Yeah, and they've.
And I just think they're gonna have problems with Northwestern's offense. I mean, I don't know if Northwestern's offense can really hurt the elite defenses in the league, but against the average to below average ones, I think they're unstoppable, spreading the field and passing the ball 50 times a game. You know, I don't fear the road in this game. The road team's won the last couple of years in this matchup, and I just think the Cats are going to blow them out.
Yeah, and it's important to note that Persa is one of the national leaders in pass efficiency, and the Gophers' pass efficiency defense is in the bottom 10 in the country, so that could be a pretty interesting game if they...
We have spent way too much time talking about this game. let's move on to the two actual games in the Big Ten this week. A big game for both teams to kick off the season. It's Penn State at Iowa. Iowa is getting a full touchdown, which isn't hugely surprising, but they're coming off a loss to Arizona. I know they just dominated Ball State, but Ball State is Ball State. Penn State has looked shaky, was down in the third quarter to Temple, but they did dominate that game in terms of total yardage, and Temple is probably one of the better teams in the MAC this year. So how do you see that one working out?
Well, I'm going to stick to my guns with Iowa, I'm going to lay the touchdown probably. I think they're going to step up and have a big effort. I think they're disappointed with what happened in the desert a couple of weeks ago. They kind of let that game get away from them because some big plays went against them early on, and they kind of had to climb out of a hole. I just think they're going to be ready to go. And I just don't trust Bolden, the Penn State quarterback, on the road against that defensive line. They haven't been as productive this year, the defensive line, but they've rotated a couple new faces in there to get more depth. But I just think they dominate the Penn State offensive line. They lost a guy over the weekend to a season-ending injury. I just think it's going to be a big Penn State win. I don't think they're going to, I don't think they're going to shut them down to 3 points the way Alabama did, but I just think you're looking at something like 24-14 maybe, a double-digit win, though, for Iowa.
All righty. The other thing is that we were talking about this earlier is the guy who's actually replacing Lou Eladis is a converted defensive tackle who was a defensive tackle until spring. So they are really scrambling at tackle. And then you have Bins and Claiborne against those guys. That's going to be no contest. All right. The final game of the week in the Big Ten is Wisconsin at Michigan State. And this is a really weird line to me. That's a pick 'em, Wisconsin versus Michigan State. I just don't understand that. What do you think about this game?
Well, you know, I'm probably somebody who likes the Michigan State team a little bit better than both you two, but I still think Wisconsin's the better team. And that line sort of surprised me, too. I thought they would be a slight favorite, but I wonder if there's still question with Toon's availability. I'm admittedly not up to speed on that one. But and then they didn't really look all that great against Arizona State a couple weekends ago. on offense. You know, they just didn't seem to be as explosive as they ever looked last year. But that's a tough game. I mean, I like a lot of the players on Michigan State's defense, but they don't play defense, you know, like team defense that well. You know, like there's like three or four guys that I really like, but their defense still is just sort of a laydown unit. I think Wisconsin can get it going, and I believe Michigan State lost 4 years in a row the week before Michigan. So right now I'm thinking Wisconsin is going to go in and kind of ruin the party, if you will, with everybody thinking that, you know, we could have 5-0 versus 5-0 on the 9th.
I think we'll get half of that, obviously, but I'm just surprised by how little respect the bookies just give Wisconsin in general. Like, Michigan is a favorite in their game against Wisconsin later this year, and that just blows my mind.
Yeah, that does. That kind of does, too, just because Wisconsin looks so talented on offense that why would you think that a Michigan defense, the way we've seen it, could stop them?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not surprised that the Iowa line has flipped around to where Michigan is a small favorite, but I really am that the Wisconsin one is. I thought Wisconsin, I don't have my link up that shows what the lines were a month ago, but I believe Wisconsin was a 3-point favorite back in the summer against Michigan State, and I don't know why it's a pick-em now.
I haven't seen anything that makes you realize why it's switched, or switched to a pick-em at least.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is that Arizona State game where they kind of survived by the skin of their teeth, but I don't think that Michigan State has been better or worse than people expected.
Yeah.
I think he's there about where you'd expect them to be in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been that surprised by anything that's gone down.
No.
I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a fun game. I mean, I think there's some questions that both teams have to answer. And, you know, it's going to be good to see Wisconsin play a legit team on the road. It's going to be good to see, you know, Michigan State, you know, finally play a Big Ten team with the, you know, the newfound, you know, apparently dominant power running attack that they look to have. You know, those running backs have really gone off and out of conference play. It'll be interesting to see. You know, everybody talks about, well, how's, you know, Denard Robinson, Michigan, going to do against the Big Ten? Well, you know, how's this whole, you know, allegedly three monster tailback thing going to do against the Big Ten defense? Because they haven't really played anybody yet, so I don't know how valid their stats are through four games.
They look legit. Like Baker and the freshman Bell look like serious players. Caper, I think, is about to get marginalized because
he's injured to start the year, and I think he's just not. He's going to miss the boat, basically.
So I think the running game is realistically one of the better in the conference, and I think their offense is going to be tough for a lot of people to stop. Defense, you know, people always talk about it, and they're always like, oh, Greg Jones, and then at the end of the year they have terrible stats. So, you know.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing because, there's a few guys on the defense that I really like as individual players, but and it's been that way for a couple of years.
Well,
but it never, ever meshes into, like, a unit that stops people. It's bizarre, and it's really been that way for about 10 or so years down up there in East Lansing as far as their defense.
Yeah, well, I mean, their secondary has always been beyond terrible, and that's, I think, a big part of it is that they just give up a lot of big, big plays, and when it comes down to it and you're throwing to beat them at the end of the game, it's not that hard.
Well, right. So what are you guys leaning to in that game? Are you thinking that Wisconsin is going to go in there and win, or do you give Michigan State a better chance?
I think Wisconsin probably wins. They won't run away with the game, but I think they can go in there and take down the Spartans.
Yeah, I mean, I could see Michigan State winning that game, but
yeah, I could see it either way, but I would lean to, if I had to pick, I would lean towards Wisconsin.
Yeah,
for sure.
I thought that I just think that Wisconsin is pretty much the team they were last year when they were pretty good. I know they lost O'Brien Schofield, but they brought back almost everybody else, and I just don't see Michigan State consistently stopping Wisconsin's offense. Like, when you've got John Clay and then you've got tight ends behind it and a veteran quarterback, and you don't have much in the way of talent in your back four, I see Wisconsin winning that game by a touchdown.
Other than the final 7 minutes of the game in 2002, where Michigan State kind of came back on them and won it in the end, Wisconsin's really, their offense has really been able to call their shot against the MSU defense. I'm thinking more of the same, too. You know, last year's game was 38-31. It looked close, but Wisconsin pretty much was going up and down the field on them, and they had a 2-touchdown lead most of the way. I'm thinking kind of more of the same, tighter because it's in East Lansing, but it'll be a fun game, though.
It will
be a fun game. Hopefully Wisconsin, you know, kind of wears them out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be a major advantage for Michigan, hopefully, going into next week.
Indiana versus Wisconsin in terms of your warm-up game.
And not even that. It's just, like, how much new stuff is Michigan going to have to show against Indiana? I mean, they're probably going to be able to run the same quarterback sweep on 4 out of 5 plays and pick up 8 yards on it. So they'll have more in their bag of tricks, I think, for that game than Michigan State will. All right, Jamie, thank you for being on. We'll talk to you next week. And,
definitely.
And go Blue. I know you're sort of
go
conflicted this week, but it's not
going to happen. A little bit, but it is what it is. It's weird. I've never been put into a really bad spot because the Hoosiers have been really bad at football, in that regard. And then the basketball thing was like the opposite,
Yeah.
And obviously the basketball thing is totally different now. I don't even know what the heck's going on with either team. But it's been kind of weird since I've left college. The football team at Michigan has been great. The football team at Indiana has been non-existent, and it was flipped for basketball. So I didn't really have too many instances where the loyalty was really checked out. So
well, thanks for being on. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Yep, bye.
All right, thank you for downloading the MGO podcast 2.1 or 2.
Something.
I am Tim Sullivan. And for Brian Cook, thank you for downloading. Thanks to Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com for joining us. And we will talk to you again soon.